The following program is a production of St. Peter the Rock Media and is brought to you by you. If you like it, consider making a donation and supporting Catholic radio programming on AM 1260 The Rock.
Go to am1260therock.com and click on the orange donate button.
AM 1260 The Rock and the Catholic Diocese of Cleveland proudly present Where We Worship. This 30-minute locally produced program highlights Northeast Ohio's Catholic parishes and institutions, their rich histories, and what they do to meet the spiritual needs of those they serve. Now here's your host, Bob Tayak.
Welcome to Where We Worship, a program highlighting parishes and Catholic institutions throughout Northeast Ohio, with the intention of offering you insight and understanding on the importance of community in our Catholic faith. This program sponsored in part by the Catholic Diocese of Cleveland. And today on Where We Worship, a special program recognizing the 175th anniversary of the diocese itself, the Catholic Diocese of Cleveland. It was on April 23rd of 1847 that Pope Pius IX issued a papal bull erecting the Diocese of Cleveland. And this is your host, Bob Tayak, joining me on Where We Worship, Father John Manning, retired priest and instructor in the history of the Diocese of Cleveland at Borromeo St. Mary Seminary here in the diocese. And we chose to highlight the significant anniversary for the diocese because we were just able to touch on it briefly during a previous program where we highlighted St. John Cathedral, which is nearly as old as the diocese. But now we'd like to explore a little more the history of the Catholic faith here in Northeast Ohio. So let me begin, Father Manning, by asking you to give us a look at the founding of the diocese. What was the state of Catholicism in Ohio in 1847?
Thank you, Bob, and welcome to all of your listeners. The status was that Catholicism, there might have been in the state of Ohio perhaps between 6,000 and 10,000 Catholics. They were widely scattered, and as you went north from the Ohio River, they were less and less and less. They were just real small communities of individuals. The first diocese in the state of Ohio was in Cincinnati, and that was founded in 1821. And from there, they sent missionaries throughout, first of all, southern Ohio, and then later on, they moved into the area, not in Cleveland itself, but rather in the outlying areas, say to the west, in the area of Toledo, between Toledo and Cleveland, and to the east, between the state line and Cleveland. So it was very scattered, and indeed, there really wasn't much of a Catholic presence at this time.
However, Father, I think if I read correctly, there were parishes here in Northeast Ohio that did precede even the diocese in their founding. How far back might those go?
The earliest ones, and I think it's important to remember that most of the people who were Catholic who came over to the United States came over either in search of good land for farming, or they came over out of really poverty-ridden circumstances, and they got whatever work they could. So the earliest ones in Doylestown and Cuyahoga Falls were really miners, and most of them were Irish. The next one would be Holy Trinity, and then in Grafton, as well as in the area of Lorain, Avon Lake, and those areas, those were German farmers who came over looking for more and more property.
1847, Father, we get our first bishop then with the papal bull. Who was that?
Okay, the first bishop was Amadeus Rapp. He was, at the time, 44 years old. Everyone contemporary of his say that he had a rough grasp of English, and that was about it.
Oh, my.
He was the French situation where the church had collapsed during the Revolution and was gradually being rebuilt.
Amadeus Rapp is now here in Northeast Ohio ostensibly, but things really do begin to develop, do they not, in that last half of the 19th century, even to the point where, if I read correctly, 1874, there was even need for the Catholic newspaper, the Universe Bulletin, that type of thing?
That's right. And that has an interesting sort of beginnings. it was actually a newspaper that was founded for the Irish, and it didn't do well, and the diocese bought it, and the bishop at the time was Richard Gilmore, and he bought it to get the Catholic message across, because there was considerable amount of anti-Catholicism in Cleveland, especially amongst the newspapers. And so this was his way of proclaiming the Catholic good news to his people, because he felt that they needed instruction as well as protection.
Well, that's really is fascinating to understand the anti-Catholicism as it existed there. But then we move into the 1880s and the waves of integration into Cleveland in particular and Northeast Ohio. That really changed the diocese and the perspective of the church, did it not?
Absolutely, because suddenly, up until this time, there were Irish and there were German. And also there were individuals, real small communities. Suddenly everything opens up. And many of them coming over really did not have a good grasp of English. And they were mainly workers. And so the church is going to have to respond to them. And it did so especially with the idea of creating a spot that was like home for them. And unfortunately, many of them carried over antagonisms as well as fighting that happened in the old country to the new country. And so parishes would divide over where they were from. And there wasn't, in many of the parishes, there was great antagonism for other churches in the areas. And from that, then, there's going to be a number of splinter parishes that are formed because of that.
But was there a tradition, Father, established alternating bishops, if you will, speaking of the traditions and the immigration status, Irish and German bishops, did they kind of alternate in their appointments here?
They did. I would say that some of them really were not very proud of their Irish background. Bishop Richard Gilmore, who was the second bishop, was actually Scot. He was Celt, but he wasn't Irish. Many of them, I think, would be more divided between the English speakers and those who learned English as their second language.
Hmm.
And that tips in huge problem in just interpretation of what the church should be in the United States. Many of them wanted much more of a European tradition, while the English speakers wanted much more of an American. And that's going to lead to some terrible battles and fights between the bishops and even amongst dioceses.
Oh, my goodness. Well, let's talk about that in a moment as when we return. The Diocese of Cleveland, major changes just after the turn of the new century on Where We Worship on AM 1260, The Rock. You're listening to Where We Worship on AM 1260, The Rock, with special thanks to the Diocese of Cleveland for support of this program. And this is your host, Bob Tayak, with a message for our listeners. Are you a digital subscriber to the weekly email newsletter provided by the Diocese of Cleveland? Well, right before the weekend begins, the Diocese delivers a series of updates and stories from ministries throughout Northeast Ohio, as well as Bishop Edward Mlesek's Gospel Reflection for that Sunday. Now, be sure to visit dioceseofcleveland.org and click on the subscriber box that pops onto your screen. And now, as our interview continues, we focus on the 175th anniversary of the Diocese of Cleveland, celebrated with a liturgy that will be forthcoming in the near future. My guest is Father John Manning, retired pastor and instructor of diocesan history at Borromeo St. Mary Seminary here in the Diocese of Cleveland. Father Manning, we just left off from the first segment talking about, so we're getting parishes now with immigration coming into Northeast Ohio, parishes established, but even then, the bishops and the priests of the diocese are in conflict over, do they become a European style or an Americanized style church? Is that where we were at as we moved into the 1890s and so forth?
Oh, yes, very much so. The debate would be between the European speakers, if you will, especially in Eastern Europe, as well as the English speakers. And the struggle was, first of all, over how American the church should be. Should it be ecumenical? should it be involved in politics? And how fast should the individuals coming from Europe be Americanized? On the other hand, the others said, no, that our language is terribly important to us, and that this is the way that we have learned to pray and to worship, and we're going to keep it. And that they deeply, deeply resented any attempts at trying to change what they considered to be the essentials of the Catholic faith. It was a battle that went all the way up to Rome at times.
My goodness, you know, I'm looking 150 years later, we still have a bit of that that goes on, and a carryover of some of those great traditions, and they're wonderful traditions, but it is amazing to know where that began. Father, as we look at the first half of the 20th century now, World War I had an impact on our nation, as we well know, and on the Catholic Church as well. I always found this interesting. In the establishment of Cleveland's first African-American parish, and later the first Hispanic parish in Lorain, could you give us some insight?
Okay, I'm a little more familiar with Our Lady of Blessed Sacrament, which was the first African-American church in Cleveland. It started as the boys came back from over there, and many of the black, the African-Americans, thought that what should happen is that they had been influenced by Catholic, perhaps chaplains, or simply the Catholicity of Europe, and they wanted a Catholic church. And so they began to work towards the establishment, as they put it, of Our Lady of the Blessed Sacrament Church, with the help of especially a Monsignor Smith, who really gave them $25,000 to start the parish. They built a small church, and then they decided that what was essential was to have a school. And so the school was actually founded and run by sisters who were founded by St. Catherine Drexel. This was the first African-American church, and still today it is very proud of the fact that it has the largest number of religious vocations to both the sisterhood as well as the priesthood in the Diocese of Cleveland. Later on, in the 60s, the church was too small, and they gradually moved over to a vacant church, St. Adelbert, on 93rd Street, which at the time was Bohemian, and they transferred it over. And so now even the technical name of that parish is St. Adelbert, Our Lady of the Blessed Sacrament. Just, a fascinating history. Yeah,
it surely is. Let's also look at this point, Father, at the year 1921, Joseph Schrems becomes Cleveland's fifth bishop, and he was a man who left, from what I understand, quite an indelible mark on the diocese. Would that be a correct assessment?
More than indelible. He was truly a remarkable man. He was a German immigrant. He was really from the Upper Peninsula of Michigan. Later on, he is going to be the bishop of Grand Rapids. Then he is going to be the Bishop of Toledo, and then finally he's the first Bishop of Toledo, and finally he is going to be the Bishop of Cleveland. He was strong-willed. He was very definite in what he believed in. As one person said, he was a man who told you exactly what he thought in no uncertain terms. He was very, very active in reforming the whole diocese, in restructuring some of it, and especially in founding parishes that were founded after the Second World War. And there's approximately 50 to 60 of them. So if you read in the Catholic papers and that, you'll find that many, many of the parishes now are celebrating their 100th anniversary. Like the parish that I was pastor of celebrated it actually last year. It was founded in 1921. And so many, many of the parishes that are now a staple really were founded by Bishop Schrems. After that, he was very, very instrumental in restructuring Catholic Charities, as well as he was very, very interested in Adoration of the Blessed Sacrament.
Let's talk about that for a moment then, Father. Speaking of that, I know one thing that comes to mind are these marvelous pictures I had seen of a completely full, brand new Cleveland Municipal Stadium on the lakefront for a Eucharistic Congress. Was he part of that development? And that was quite an event, was it not?
Yes, it was. That happened in September of 1935. And his idea was there was both an international Eucharistic Congress as well as a national one. Bishop Schrems was very devoted to the Blessed Sacrament. He is going to be the one who founded the conversion of St. Paul and brought the Poor Clare sisters in. He is also going to be very, very active in supporting Eucharistic devotion. What's interesting about it is Bishop Schrems also thought big. He wanted something grand and something majestic, and he was able to draw in the National Eucharistic Congress in 1935. Which was incredibly big and large. It took over pretty much all of the city of Cleveland for really a weekend. And part of it was they had a huge mass at the stadium. They figured that there most probably was close to 100,000 people at that because it was standing room only. And the most famous is a Eucharistic procession. And then the forming of a living monstrance. And many of the pictures are taken of that, where there is about 100 bishops, as well as a huge number of people that came in, and they formed this monstrance, and they turned all the lights off.
My goodness.
It's all just gorgeous.
Yeah, that is just really an extraordinary event of its time, and really of any time. Well, coming up, post-World War II, the Diocese of Cleveland expands once again. We'll have more on AM 1260, The Rock. You're listening to Where We Worship on AM 1260, The Rock, Cleveland Catholic Radio. And our focus for this broadcast is the 175th anniversary of the Diocese of Cleveland. I'm your host, Bob Tayak, and my guest is retired priest and instructor of history at Borromeo St. Mary Seminary here in Cleveland, Father John Manning. And Father, we're talking post-World War II now in the history of the diocese, and I guess what we call the Great Builder. Archbishop Edward F. Hoban really went to town when it came to developing the diocese post-World War II. Could you give us some insight?
Bishop Hoban had the vision, along with his chancery staff, that the church needed to grow. And so it's going to look, first of all, say in the city of Cleveland, that the population was beginning to grow outward and southward. And so they're going to begin to develop, breaking off from older parishes, new parishes that are going to be formed and are going to continue the work. At the time, especially in the schools were packed. And so very often these new parishes were able to take many of the students and to train them and to allow the whole parish to grow and to function in a much stronger way. Along with that, Bishop Hoban was very, very interested in supporting higher education. And thus, during his time, there's going to be a number of high schools that are formed throughout the city of Cleveland. And then finally, he is also going to be supportive of the Catholic colleges in the area, John Carroll, Notre Dame, and Ursuline, as well as the new St. John's College. And he's going to be the one who's really going to force many of the teachers to come to St. John's College and to learn the St. John's way of teaching and of record keeping and the like, so that this would be something that would draw together all of the schools by the nature of their teachers. At one time, that was known as Sisters College because of the number of religious that are there. He also was very, very instrumental in encouraging Catholic charities, as well as the whole idea of Catholics being involved in the affairs of the nation. This was a very, very remarkable time for a man who came to the diocese when he was 69.
So
it's really remarkable the energy that he had.
Boy, it really is. And then I had read in 1951, he received recognition for his services and was given that title of Archbishop. That was rather unusual for the time, was it not?
It was. We no longer do it now, but it was called an honorary archbishopric, attached to the person, not to the place. And so I remember as growing up that they would read the letters from the archbishop, and it would be Edward F. Hoban, Bishop of Archbishop Edward F. Hoban, Bishop of the Diocese of Cleveland, indicating his new role and his position.
Boy, that's interesting. I was going to say, Father, and as we move then transition from that, we move into the 1960s, Second Vatican Council, direct effect on diocesan operations and the liturgy and so forth, and then even things that came out of that, such as the Pope's call to serve the world, and suddenly the Diocese of Cleveland has a mission it establishes in El Salvador?
Yes. Responding to the plea of the Salvadorian bishops, the Diocese of Cleveland decided to commit to supporting several missions in El Salvador. Very generously, really up until now, they have sent priests as well as religious and also lay people to come and serve and to really create a community of Catholics, even sometimes in very, very perilous times, including now.
Oh, they
of course,
surely are.
The most famous are the four religious women who were assassinated in, or murdered, really, in El Salvador.
Right. I think we must reflect on Cleveland's first homegrown and then longest serving bishop, if I'm correct, Anthony M. Pilla, who took over there here in the latter half of the 20th century, and his legacy lives on as well, does it not?
Oh, very much so. You have to remember that Bishop Pilla started teaching in the seminary when he was 2 years ordained. And so he has really trained in one form or another whole generations of priests that have looked up to him as a spiritual father, a mentor, and someone who they could easily talk to. He was a very generous man and also one who was excellent to talk to person to person. He was also aware of the city of Cleveland when we think about it, because he is going to be the one who is going to talk about the great letter, the church in the city, and trying to help the parishes in the city exist and continue by the parishes in the suburbs, helping them. Also, he's going to be very active in really forming a very distinctive view of our liturgy as well as our operations. We were very, very blessed to have him for as long as we did. And even to now, many, many people talk about how wonderful he was and what a good man he was and how very much he had a real good contact with the seminarians and the priests. The last things that talked to the seminarians.
Right. And you know, I we need to recognize, I think, the fact that he even became the president of the U.S. Conference of Catholic Bishops. I mean, that's how well-regarded he was, really, internationally.
Well, internationally, yes. He was very well-known nationally as well as internationally and respected, too. And typical of Bishop Pilla, actually, he was doing so much that he actually got sick from it. And so some of his later health problems really came from that time where he was running all over the world representing the U.S. bishops.
And that's a little known aspect to it, but boy, an important one. Well, you've been listening to Where We Worship, and this is your host, Bob Tayak. This presentation featuring the 175th anniversary of the Diocese of Cleveland. Where We Worship, a production of AM 1260 Radio, focusing on the essential aspects of community worship and participation in our Catholic life. And as written in the Gospel of St. Matthew, chapter 2, prayer as a community is essential for our spiritual growth and personal well-being. God does not intend for us to bear our crosses alone.
Thank you for listening to Where We Worship with host Bob Tayak, presented by AM 1260 The Rock and the Catholic Diocese of Cleveland. If you missed any part of today's show, you can listen to the program in its entirety by going to our website, am1260therock.com, and clicking the On Demand tab.
The preceding program was a production of St. Peter the Rock Media and is brought to you by you. If you liked it, consider making a donation and supporting Catholic radio programming on AM 1260 The Rock.
Click on the orange donate button at AM1260TheRock.com.